Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Milwaukee Journal Settle Milwaukee Bucks podcast joins you on a Wednesday late morning. The Milwaukee Bucks are 1-2 in the Orlando bubble. There's some asterisks, caveats to what we've seen so far. But as we record, the Bucks have not yet clinched the number one overall seed in the East. That's probably coming soon. Could be as recent or as soon as a win over the Miami Heat on Thursday. But right now, the Bucks. Kind of looking a little bit sloppy in the early going. They do have some time here. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast, and on the other line is Matt Velasquez. He is the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. How is bubble life treating you, Matt Velasquez? I know you're not in the bubble, but you're kind of regularly peering into the bubble watching NBA basketball in Orlando, am I right?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, bubble life has been pretty solid. You know, lots of basketball. Lots of things to do. It's better than the days where it was just like, man, like, what's happening? Like, what am I doing? Like, what can I write about? What can I watch? Like, you know, it's just very nice to have basketball back in our lives.
Yes, that's true. Although I'm sure Bucks fans are feeling a little bit dismissive of it after watching the Bucks drop back-to-back games very different ways, once against the Houston Rockets, which we will talk about, in which the Bucks looked fine until they collapsed in the final 3 minutes. And then came the Nets game. Now, there's plenty of things to say about the Nets game in terms of how the Bucks shouldn't be too worried about it. They didn't play any of their starters in the second half, including Giannis and Chris Middleton. Brook Lopez didn't play the entire game. It was almost exclusively backups in the second half, with some guys getting minutes. I mean, Eric Bledsoe was trying to work his way back into the lineup. His first action, Pat Connaughton's first action, saw very limited work from them. But the Nets are kind of a disaster. They have, I think you could argue, they're missing their 8 best players for various reasons. One guy they signed, Jamal Crawford, played a mere 5 minutes before he returned to the bench with an injury after a long layoff between his most recent NBA action and the Orlando bubble. So Brooklyn didn't have much to offer, and yet they scored 73 points on the Bucks in the first half. 73 points with this sort of, I don't want to call them a G League team, I think that's unfair, but, you know, by and large, backup players. And that was with the starters on the floor for the Bucks. We are all learning the name Timothy Luwahu Cabarro, I think is how you might say it.
Just say TLC.
TLC. Oh, yes, I saw one website indicate that that normally his shot is unpretty, but in this game it was Waterfalls. Heavy, heavy late 90s pop music references there. Kind of a disaster. And there's a lot of reasons why, and obviously the Bucks fans can't be too worried about it. It's sort of an aberration. You know that it'll be different if they face each other in the first round, which they very well might. But I got to think there's some things that you saw here that were I don't know. I mean, the defense, the turnovers, these things have to raise some red flags, right?
Yeah, no, maybe a few, like maybe like some like red flags, like kind of like raised a little bit, like sometimes when like you're in class and you're not sure if you know the answer, so you put your hand up just like a tiny bit. I think it's kind of like that. I would like to say that I'm pretty sure. I mean, I didn't get it totally right, but I kind of called the Nets game, in the sense that like on this podcast, I said that, you know, you've asked me before like how much I thought guys were gonna play, and I said they were gonna be 2 or 3 games that Bud gave his starters off, and I've said the Nets game and probably the Wizards game were the two that I expected would be games that guys wouldn't play. And so I didn't get it totally right because Giannis and Chris still did play. It was Wes Matthews with the sore right calf that had the night off, and Brook Lopez, coach's decision, had the night off. So I think I get partial credit there. What I was not right about was in slandering the Nets and just saying that they, you know, they weren't good and they were terrible. And that, I mean, it's all kind of true, but I assumed that the Bucks would be able to handle their business better against the Nets, regardless of who played. And if you told me that not Giannis and Chris played a half, I would just assume it was they're up by 25 at halftime, right? Like that's kind of what I would think, because you know the Bucks, if you look at everything that you have to look at, the Bucks are a much better team. But what happened, I think, you know, in that game, was the Bucks had absolutely zero urgency. Like they were kind of disinterested, going through the motions. Like they treated it like a scrimmage. Like it kind of felt like a scrimmage. And the Nets guys, you know, give them a lot of credit. A lot of these are guys who are either young or fighting for a spot in the league or trying to prove themselves. And they had a lot to prove and a lot to show. And they went out there, you know, and they busted their butts. They played harder. They worked harder the whole game. And they deserved to win. And, you know, that's just kind of one of those wake-up calls where it's, okay, like, you can't just roll the ball out there and beat anybody. There are good players on opposing teams that if they're giving it more than you're giving it, like, you're going to get got. And I think there was some of that going on. Obviously, if the Bucks wanted to win that game, if they played their guys the whole game, if they didn't roll out, you know, the end of their bench for most of the end of the game, you know, I can't see a reason why they wouldn't win. But you mentioned red flags, like, yes, turnovers are a problem. Like they've had way too many turns. I think they had like 19, I want to say, against the Nets. That's after a game where they had 23 against the Rockets, including, you know, 4 turnovers in the final like 3 minutes that totally sunk any chance they had after being up by 8. So playing sloppily, you know, bad passes, bad turnovers, just being out of sync, looking like they're not sure what they want to do on offense. I think that's a problem. I think that's something that they'll have to adjust to over time. And the defense, I mean, it is what it is. Like, they played a Rockets team that is very unique, that plays everyone 6'7" and under, like, throughout the whole game. And the Bucks said, you know what? We're just going to be us, and we're going to do exactly what we do, and we don't care what your life is about, like, what your style is. We're just not going to do it, and we're going to let you try and beat us with Jeff Green and P.J. Tucker threes and try and stop James Harden, Russell Westbrook. And I'm not going to say they did that. I think Russell Westbrook had a great game. I think James Harden was limited. I mean, 24 points for him is pretty good. But, you know, they made that decision. And I don't know how many times they're going to have to make that decision. And if it's a playoff series, do they start switching and doing things differently? I think it's possible they could. They did last year against the Raptors. And then against the Nets, I don't think you can look at any stats accumulated in that game and say this is representative of anything, because once we get to meaningful games, the Frank Mason and DJ Wilson and maybe even the Sterling Brown minutes, based on how things have gone so far, those might all just evaporate. Like it's just not gonna be there anymore. So yes, the defense, they let teams shoot threes. That's I feel like that shouldn't be news in August of 2020. This is what the Bucks have done all year. They've let teams shoot threes. Some games they make them, some games they don't. Most games the Bucks win. Like that's the formula. They defend the paint at all costs. And I don't know. I feel like for some fans, even fans who have watched a long time, like it still is like surprising. And I just can't be surprised by it. You know, I don't think threes are the reasons why the Bucks lost to the Rockets and the Nets. Neither of those teams shot the three really, like, you know, incredibly well. Yes, they made a lot, but they only shot, like, they both shot below 37%. Like, if you're hovering around 35%, like, I think the Bucks will take their chances on that. You know, but when teams are shooting, like, in the 40s or anything like that, like, okay, then that's just a night where another team got hot, or you have a problem. Or if they're making, like, 25, which is, you know, an insane number, like, then it's okay, well, maybe there's something to it. But I don't think that's the reason why they lost. They lost because their defense, while it was what they normally do, I don't think they're playing it at the same level that they have. And more importantly, I think the turnovers have been such a killer issue, but especially when you look at the turnover margin, where they're giving teams more about a dozen more possessions, a dozen more shots than they're getting. I think that they're making it hard for themselves to win by being sloppy and being careless.
18-7 is the turnover margin against the Nets, and you mentioned they didn't necessarily light it up from three beyond the pale. 36% I think any team would take, but like you mentioned, Brooklyn getting a lot of looks inside. I think it's the 2-point shooting that really should be a greater concern if there is a concern about defense, and like you said, probably not the same intensity. A lot of backups getting a lot of minutes. It still came down to the wire, of course. It was a 119-116 final. Bucks with a sloppy final possession did not get a final shot, but were in position to do so. I guess if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm thinking, the Bucks backups should be able to beat the Nets backups. And even if we're not talking about, not really talking about this being what a playoff matchup would look like, you'd still like to think the Bucks backups could come out of the floor and not miss a beat. And I just think that they obviously they missed a beat. Nets guys might be scrappy and fighting. You'd think that the Bucks backups would be in the same position, but Dante DiVincenzo has really struggled. We haven't really seen a whole lot from Sterling Brown. I think a couple other guys you could say aren't doing super great either. I don't know if that is something to be concerned about, because like you said, they're not going to get those minutes in big time playoff situations. But I do think there's definitely more than one Bucks player who has struggled. Giannis and Chris Middleton have been phenomenal. They're not the problem. And a team's going to shoot well interior wise when Brook Lopez is off the floor. That's just a matter of fact. He's one of the best interior defenders in basketball. But I guess it's concerning to me if I'm a Bucks fan to see backup guys just not looking good right now, especially DiVincenzo, who's been very up and down, it seems.
Yeah, and I thought Dante actually against the Nets was pretty good. Like, he played more than anybody else on the team. I think he had like 24 minutes, something like 11 points, like 5 or 6 assists, no turnovers. Like, obviously that flubbed final possession is going to stick out, where it's not a turnover, but he could have handled it better. But I think given the situation he was in, I think it was a little bit better than he had played in the previous two games. And obviously in those two games, he was asked to be a starter, asked to play the nominal point guard role with Eric Bledsoe out, something that is not his normal slot on the team. And I think he struggled with that. I think, like 5 or so turnovers against the Rockets. It seemed like Russell Westbrook was hunting him, knowing that he had just like a size and athleticism advantage and just could literally back him into paint whenever he wanted to. I mean, Russ is a hard cover for literally anyone, but that's especially hard when you're Dante DiVincenzo, it's your second year in the league, and this is, one of the rare times you've had a chance to go against somebody like that. But I think he's been up and down. I think if you're a Bucks fan, you'd want to see more of what you saw against the Nets, and maybe with Eric Bledsoe getting more time, as the games roll on, that maybe Dante can fit back into what he normally does and playing a little bit fewer minutes, being more of an energy guy, matching up better on defense in terms of not having to necessarily take a team's best player or second best player for extended stretches. And maybe the ball won't be in his hands as much on offense. It's a good experience to run the point, for him. It is a good experience for him to move the ball and run the offense a little bit. But when he's off ball and he's able to, spot up or kind of just like fly in for offensive rebounds or cut or anything like that, I think that's a little bit better for the Bucks, and a little bit better for him, a little more of a natural fit. I think that over time, I expect that he'll get back to what he had been doing after this, kind of mini baptism by fire, if you could even call it that. But I think you made a great point, kind of unrelated to this, that when it comes to the defense, the 2-point shots, especially against the Nets, were a problem. I think the Nets were like 8 of 10, like inside the arc in the first quarter on, what was it yesterday? Tuesday. So, they were getting buckets inside. They outscored the Bucks in the paint in the first quarter. And yes, like Brook Lopez was out, But you would expect that the Bucks defense, especially with Giannis being in the game, I think he played 8.5 minutes in the first quarter. With him in there, with Robin Lopez, you would expect that they'd be able to, you know, maintain some sanctity of like the paint and be able to defend a little bit better. And it just wasn't there. And that just kind of underscores how I thought that they just didn't show enough urgency, enough intensity, not enough effort in that first quarter. It was an afternoon game. It seemed like they kind of rolled out of bed and were like, all right, we got the Nets, like whatever. And the Nets were like, hey, we can beat the best team in the NBA today if we just like play super hard. And that's what happened. So, yeah, it was not a pretty game. Not at all.
The game, of course, that was a little bit more apples to apples is the game against the Houston Rockets a couple days before the Nets game. And we're still, I think, as an NBA base, still getting used to the way that the Rockets play, where they, like you mentioned, don't offer any size at all. They just run. They try to force the turnovers, which they were able to do. James Harden does not have a reputation as a great defender, but he is capable of post defense, and he was key. The Rockets in general did show that they were capable of defending a pretty good team, and then they pulled away in the final minutes. The Bucks had a lead, I think, as great as 6 points in the final, right before the final 3 minute stretch, and then the Rockets hit some shots and pulled away, won the game. We probably won't spend a lot of time talking about the Rockets anymore this season. It seems unlikely they would come out of the West and face Milwaukee in a potential NBA Finals, but seeing that style, I wonder what you think of it matching up with the Bucks. It's conceivable that's a template to beat the Bucks the way that they were able to play. You know, you're not getting other teams just going with five guys 6'7" or shorter. But what do you think of that? Do you feel like there was some exposure there that the Bucks maybe are vulnerable to that type of run and gun style? Or maybe if the Bucks get in the situation again, we don't see big minutes for Robin Lopez or guys who are, you know, maybe they do try to play down in size a little bit and sort of match up with run and gun, because we know they can do that as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that going small is something that teams will probably still do against the Bucks. I mean, they've done it before. I don't think anybody has necessarily the personnel that the Rockets do. It's just a very unique setup where, you know, this whole scheme that they've created was predicated on unlocking Russell Westbrook. Because when you have Westbrook, who's not a great three-point shooter, on the court at the same time as a center who's not a great three-point shooter, then it just mucks up the paint. Teams can just hang out down low and not have to worry too much about two guys. And that allows, you know, allowed teams to key more on James Harden, and Russell Westbrook wasn't able to get going as much. And so now, like, the floor is open, it's very open, and they force teams to make difficult decisions. And if you really, you know, spread your defense out and defend the perimeter, then they're pretty content to give Russell Westbrook the ball and expect that he can beat anybody one-on-one, which he can do. So, you know, I think that having that personnel, having two former MVPs and two, you know, every perennial all-stars does help. But I think that there are teams in the East who can do this too. I think you look at the Toronto Raptors and Boston Celtics, the two teams right behind the Bucks in the standings, like they have, like, you know, versatile, switchable, you know, well-sized players, especially on the wing, who can play like a small ball lineup like that. You look at, you know, Toronto, just, I mean, they have just so many like of those, like, you know, 6'7" or 6'8", 6'6" to 6'8", like, wings, you can just throw in there and you can play small and try and spread the court. Like Boston, you know, I can imagine a scenario where, you know, Marcus Smart is guarding Giannis and you have, you know, a lineup around him of something like Kemba Walker, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown. Like, I feel like we've seen that in the past. And so, you know, the Bucks, yeah, it is a good experience for them to see these small lineups and experiment with how they want to approach them. We saw a lot of Brook Lopez posting up, something that they've liked, and he did well, especially in the second half against the Rockets. A lot of Giannis trying to get inside. And overall, like, I think they handled it pretty well. Like, they didn't win the game, but I don't think it was because of like a broken system or a broken scheme or like a broken reaction to what was going on. I think just their offense, like, made a bunch of like careless and sloppy and like bad mistakes down the stretch. And some of those were forced by Houston being solid and aggressive on defense and taking advantage of of the Bucks' mistakes and forcing some of those mistakes. That's definitely something that contributed. But I think that if the Bucks see those types of situations in the playoffs, I think they know that they still want to be who they are. They want to do what they do. Like, they believe that the way they approach things works. And I think you can look at parts of that game on Sunday and say, hey, that is an indication that it works. But they just need to, know how to finish and how to keep it consistent. And I think part of that is, Giannis said after the game that he thought he and Brooke, who were carrying a lot of the load on offense, he thought they got tired. And so how can they parse out their minutes or manage what they're doing in order to make sure those guys are not tired at the end of the game? Or is that just a function of that was their second game back and they're still working their way back into shape and they were just going to be tired? But, that won't be an issue in the future. Maybe we'll see some more Giannis at center lineups and things like that to counter small balls, match fast and shooting with fast and shooting. But I think there are a lot of good options out there. The Bucks do have the roster versatility where they can decide how they want to play and how they want to do things. And I wouldn't take it as too big of an indictment on what they do and how they play. Unless it, becomes a more serious or more continuous problem, I'd say in the playoffs.
I definitely agree with you. I feel like this is only going to help them. I was giving this some thought yesterday. Let's say the worst thing happens and the Bucks lose out, the Raptors win all their games in the bubble. Nobody thinks this is going to happen, but let's say it does. And the Bucks get bumped to the number two seed. There's no home court advantage in play here. They're not trying to get a better record than the Lakers to get the home court advantage in the finals. That stuff isn't going to matter. They're going to wind up either facing in the semifinals the Celtics or the Heat. I honestly don't know which team would be the better matchup for the Bucks at this point. So I'm guessing they don't either. So I don't think they're going to be too concerned about it. The difference between a 7 seed and an 8 seed, the Magic or the Nets, pretty negligible. The Magic will be without Jonathan Isaac. I'll ask you about that, but I think that's obviously a huge, huge loss for Orlando, especially if they're trying to match up with the Bucks. So I don't know if there's, the difference between the one seed and the two seed, there's almost none at this point. So I think the Bucks, obviously they're going to get the one seed, barring a statistical anomaly of epic proportions, but there isn't really, there isn't really something they still need to accomplish. So to get into a situation they're unfamiliar with, like the Rockets, and fight their way through, and I think play pretty well for the most part, I think that's going to serve them down the line, like you're saying. One quick thing before we leave the Rockets. James Harden is probably one of the more controversial players in the league in terms of, you've got a faction of fans who feel like he's awesome and fun to watch and, scoring in crazy amounts. And you've got a faction of fans who can't stand him, probably a louder faction that can't stand watching him play, the way he kicks his legs when he shoots, draws fouls. Obviously, a healthy chunk of his offense comes from the free throw line. He did not have a great game against the Bucks, but where do you fall on him? I think we've talked about him before, but he is a tough watch, in my opinion. I mean, I do think he's amazing, but I also, I don't like the fact that, for example, he's trying to kick people in the groin when he's taking a shot, intentional or not. How would you sort of describe or defend, I guess, James Harden's game to somebody who expresses that they can't stand watching the guy play?
Oh, see, I really like watching him play. Like, it's funny because I know the issues. I know, like, why people don't like watching him play. But I just kind of really enjoy, like, that he's different. Like, I enjoy that, like, he's not like watching anyone else really in the league. And he has kind of a space to his own and a style all his own, and it undoubtedly and unquestionably works. And when he gets hot, he is just like supernova and can score from anywhere at any time on anyone. I know that all of this praise for James Harden is not usually like a favorite, I'm sure, on a Bucks podcast. all things considered. Especially since, he was asked about Giannis after the game and just said next question. There is some pettiness, there is some beef in the history between those guys and these teams. But no,
I was going to sound the petty horn for something later, but let's do it right now. Let's just get it over with.
There you go.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I just feel like I've seen him a few times in person. Obviously, I'm not seeing him in person now. But it is just impressive, like, what he can do and the way that he can shape a game in a way that other people can't. Like, it's just impressive, like I said. So I'm definitely not in the camp of people who despises watching James Harden play. I know that there have been times where I have seen him play in person, or I've been covering him, and there have been a million fouls in the game, and he's been involved in a lot of them, and I'm like stressed about deadline and the game taking forever, and I don't enjoy that. And I feel like that game the other night also lasted pretty long. And there were a lot of fouls, especially in the first half. But I still think that overall, like, you know, it's a styles make fights kind of thing. And, you know, James Harden is a style all his own, which makes all the fights a lot more fun.
Giannis 33-18-8 in that game, helping the Bucks cause, even if it didn't end well. Giannis also had 32-15-7 in a win against the Celtics, which I think is probably the most indicative game of what the Bucks are likely to see going forward in the postseason. The Bucks pull out the 119-112 win, but a lot of it, I would say the Bucks were in pretty good trouble in that game, and a lot of that success can be attributed to a rare foul call getting overturned. We were talking about how Bud likes to save, Coach Mike Budenholzer likes to save his challenge call for late in the game for just this circumstance. If Giannis gets a really important foul, he'll review it, and in this case, it was overturned. Marcus Smart played a great game for the Boston Celtics. Was contributed on a lot of levels, but certainly in drawing fouls and getting the Bucks out of sorts on offense. And he seemingly drew the sixth and final foul on Giannis. They overturned it. It became a foul on Marcus Smart. A basket. He made the basket that ended up going from wiped off the board to counting plus the free throw, and the Bucks pull away. Boston not happy with that call in the end, but it is a rare instance where Giannis got a call. We've sort of talked about how he's not a salesman, and that definitely hurts his cause, and he's difficult to officiate for a lot of reasons. But I did find this to be a pretty encouraging game. I'm a pretty big believer in what the Boston Celtics have going on, and I thought the way they finished this game was pretty encouraging. You and I were talking through most of this game on our Bucks watch party at the Journal Sentinel, jsonline.com. So maybe it wasn't, you didn't get a chance to really analyze what you were looking at. But overall, I got to think this is a pretty encouraging, you know, a pretty encouraging game. The most normal game that we've seen of the three so far, and the Bucks were able to win it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, yes, there are certain caveats. Like Kemba Walker didn't play the fourth quarter. And,
right.
You know, and Eric Bledsoe didn't play at all. So obviously if we get to a Bucks Celtics postseason series, those guys would be very much involved, in the game and in clutch time and things like that. You know, I think that, you know, it being the first game back for both teams, there's a lot of rust to shake off, a lot of, you know, things that maybe wouldn't be normal, or, you know, anomalies that wouldn't be happening down the road. I don't think Jason Tatum, as well as Wesley Matthews and the Bucks played him. I don't think he's going to shoot that poorly most nights. What was he, like 5 of 18 or something like that? Maybe even worse than that. I can't remember, but he was not good. And I don't think that's consistently where he's going to be. And I think that, you know, the Bucks were able to kind of grind it out, grit it out, without playing their best, without, you know, even playing their normal, like, rotations. Like, Bud still went deep into the bench, which, you know, he's been known to do even in the playoffs. But I think the guys were still, you know, held down a little bit and tried to be, you know, he was trying to pace them and everything like that. So I think the game was a good game. I don't want to over, you know, sell it as, like, way more indicative or you know, more important than the other two games. I think all of these games should be taken with a pretty big grain of salt. Yeah, especially since we've literally never done anything like this, or this is unprecedented territory with the bubble, with the long layoff, with having to reassemble teams and get them going again. But I do think that overall in these three games, we have seen a consistent trend, which is, you know, the Bucks are not playing for now. Like, they don't, I don't want to say they don't care, because that implies, like, negative things, but, like, they are not thinking about now, like, at all. Like, their focus is on, like, managing minutes, being healthy, like, trying to slowly get things going again. and focus on being ready for the playoffs and being at their best come playoff time, which being at their best involves being healthy. And so, you know, they're going to do things that might spite them in games now, like go deep in the bench, like limit guys' minutes, like not even play Eric Bledsoe and Pat Connaughton against the Rockets when maybe they were ready and both guys seemed in interviews to say that they were feeling good and ready. They wanted to give them more conditioning, more 5-on-5, more 3-on-3 work, and really, really be ready after they both tested positive for COVID-19 last month and had to miss extended time where they couldn't do literally anything. And so, like, that's the Bucks' plan. They are going to slow play this. They're going to, you know, I felt like they kind of punted the Nets game, which they might not like people saying that, but I think that it's kind of what it felt like. You know, and they're just going to take whatever record they get. Like, they'll win some games, they'll lose some games. They're not playing for now. Like, it just doesn't matter. And, like, maybe the record won't be as good because if the season had played out, had been no pandemic, they would have a bunch more home games. The Rockets game would have been at home. They would have a bunch of games against teams that aren't, at least a handful of games against teams that aren't even in the bubble. So you get a few more of those, like, tune-up games. Maybe they can manage minutes differently. But now, almost every game is against a good team. Like, every team there had, you know, came in with some chance at the playoffs. Like, you look at, like, the Nets and the Wizards, probably the two worst-off teams that are there, and both are on the Bucks' schedule. So, like, taking games off against them is probably something they would have done in the spring if they could have done that. So I think that it's not necessarily a fun thing to watch at times. It's maybe not the best message or whatever to send to fans that, hey, like, just wait and we'll figure it out and we'll start caring and making, you know, games competitive, stuff like that down the road. But I think the Bucks have been consistent with it, and I think it's important that they've been consistent.
We'll talk more about this here, the Jonathan Isaac injury to the Orlando Magic and how that might impact the Bucks. I don't want to leave the Celtics game just yet, but this is part of why Giannis and others are resting. Yes, they've had a ton of time off. Of course they have. But and we've seen it a lot with baseball. I know I always bring up baseball. How many injuries we've seen this year with the extended layoff. This is kind of a delicate time with players who have been inactive in some way, shape, or form, inactive, certainly not like NBA active for a long period of time. You gotta move slowly toward the goal here, and that's what the Bucks are doing. It's why they're not they're not going all in to beat the Nets or even the Rockets or Celtics. But again, before we leave that Celtics game, yes, they didn't have Eric Bledsoe, they didn't have Pat Connaughton, but it is in my mind a little alarming that really the Celtics could have won that game if the late call against Giannis goes a different direction. And Jason Tatum did not play well at all. Kemba Walker didn't play at all for the latter stages of the third quarter and any of the fourth quarter as he's coming back from his own injury. I do feel like the Celtics are a tough matchup. And we did sort of spend some time last podcast trying to imagine which team was the tougher matchup for the Bucks, possibly in the Eastern Conference Finals. At this point, I think it's Toronto. But Miami, Boston, the differences between them. I think Boston's going to be a difficult matchup for the Milwaukee Bucks. And I was affirmed in that belief watching them in action in that first game Friday. Do you feel more strongly now that the Celtics are going to give the Bucks problems?
Yeah, I think so. I think last year, obviously, you know, the Bucks and Celtics did play in the postseason, and the Celtics did not give them very many problems. Obviously, there was that first game of the series where suddenly the sky was falling in the second round, and then the Bucks were like, no, it's not, and took it from there. But this is a different Celtics team. I think that, you know, by adding Kemba Walker, they've kind of changed the dynamic. Obviously, they lose Kyrie, they lose Al Horford, but bringing in Kemba Walker and kind of having a little bit more healthy, more right Gordon Hayward, and obviously the jumps that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have made have been significant. I think they just kind of fit and mesh better, and they know who they are better. And they have, like, I think a pretty high ceiling. I think they're a really good team. And so, yeah, I think that at this point it'd be a third round series, but a conference finals, if it were to be, you know, Bucks and Celtics, it would not be a reprise of last year's Bucks Celtics. I don't think it'd be a 5-game series where the Bucks would win 4 in a row at any point. I think the Celtics are just a little bit better, and have a little bit more, I don't want to say supernova, but they have a little bit more explosive potential than I think they did a year ago, where I think a lot of it was, you know, maybe more Kyrie centric than the Bucks were than the Celtics ended up being comfortable with, and I think that, you know, the wings that they have, the versatility that they have, you can see them playing. I think we said earlier, I can see them playing a small ball lineup against the Bucks and having success. I can see them, you know, playing, you know, a mix of guys like Daniel Tice and Semi Ojeleye and having, you know, a decent amount of success inside defending the Bucks at different stretches. But, you know, I still think the Bucks would win that series. I think that one team has Giannis and one doesn't, and that's pretty important. But I think it would be a tough test. And as you mentioned, the Raptors have been great. They've been great all season. They've been great, particularly since, like, you know, the middle of January. They have a loss to the Bucks in that stretch, but they've still been great, and they still have just a ton of versatility and depth and guys who can hurt you at any time. And they also, you know, have that little, you know, edge of like, hey, like, we were here last year. We've played you before. We've beaten you before, which is a little bit extra confidence and swagger than any other team can have.
And the Bucks fans getting absolute flashbacks, seeing Fred Van Vliet take over a game in the NBA bubble. That's not a good time. The Bucks and Raptors will get a chance to see each other in the regular season, and we'll see which side takes that game seriously, if either side, and how that plays out. One last thought on the Celtics: Jaylen Brown posting to his Instagram a photo where he put the head of Giannis Antetokounmpo and the official from that game together, had them holding hands. Very petty. We thought this is where I thought the petty horn would work. So here we go again. Play that petty horn.
Petty. Petty.
I also thought it was kind of in poor taste, but aside from that, does it? When I see someone complain, and this is clearly my Bucks-centric bias showing here. When I see someone complain that Giannis was given favoritism by the officiating, honestly, it makes me just laugh out loud. It feels like Giannis is never the beneficiary, and never, obviously, is too strong a word here, so seldom the beneficiary of the whistle, because officials have a hard time, you know, calling him. He's so unique, and he doesn't sell his calls, and I think it's something that he and the Bucks have struggled with. And then, yeah, he gets overturned on replay, a play that was held up by the last two-minute report and does look on replay to be the correct call. It's a big call, but I find it hard to believe that anyone thinks Giannis is getting the benefit, an MVP's whistle at this point in his career. When you see that, do you feel the same? Do you feel like, seriously, people really think that Giannis was getting the benefit of the doubt? Because I thought the opposite for the majority of that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that play, but it's also like the, you know, the one-handed push to Daniel Tice's, like, right, midsection, which, you know, maybe was a little excessive, but he was trying to fight through a screen, and he kind of just, like, got him right in the, you know, right above the hip, I guess, and that probably hurt.
That was a weird play. It was a weird play. I thought he could have been called for the foul there for sure.
Yeah, I definitely could have. I mean, if there was a foul called, I'm sure Bucks fans would have been up in arms, but I wouldn't have been, like, surprised. Like, it wouldn't have been, like, some, like, you know, like, ridiculous decision. Like, when you look at that, like, you say, okay, like, that was, like, you know, a guy fighting through a screen, but it also was kind of strong. Like, it was a little bit more of a push than you might expect. And so the refs reviewed for hostile act. They weren't sure. They didn't have the angle to see if he hit him below the belt. And they had the ability. They could have reviewed that, not found a hostile act, but still assessed a foul. And they decided not to. So I think that's part of the calculus that Celtics and their fans have when they're considering, you know, Giannis and the refs and all that. I think the block charge call was pretty clearly a block. I think that, you know, as Giannis was starting his ascent, Smart's foot was still in the restricted area. That's pretty textbook block. But when you, like, compound that with the Tice thing, like, it just, you know, creates a, you know, a frustration. And I'm sure that would be the case if it were the opposite way around for Bucks fans. Like, whatever team that's affecting is going to be negative. I was not expecting that level of, like, drama and intensity and Instagram posts and, like, Marcus Smart saying, like, hey, like, they wanted to keep him in the game. Let's call a spade a spade. Like, this is game one in the bubble, right? Like, I was not expecting it to, like, ratchet back up to, like, you know, March or April level, like, NBA intensity right away. And it did. And that was very welcome, but I was exhausted, like, by the end of that day. I was like, I was not ready for this. Like, this is, you know, this is midseason form, and I'm just not there. But it was fun, and I don't know, it's good to have things back and for guys to take things that seriously, even if it is being petty.
Even petty beefs need a bit of a warm-up getting back into full swing here in the Orlando bubble, and we certainly got some of that. It was very fun. We may see the Celtics down the line, and a similar question, and certainly one that I've asked in varieties before. I think we can all acknowledge that we would expect the Bucks to win that first round series, no problem. But with Jonathan Isaac going out for the Orlando Magic, that's a huge loss, big man loss. That the Magic and Nets right now are kind of neck and neck for that eighth spot, and obviously, the team that gets the eighth spot will probably be facing the Bucks in the first round. Which do you've now seen the Nets back in action, and we know that Orlando is going to be shorthanded. So which would the Bucks rather face? Because I think Orlando being at full strength seems like the obvious answer. It's their home turf on top of it, if there's any fringe benefit to that right now. But losing their big man is a pretty substantial loss. The Nets are running on, you know, their third and fourth string guys, but they did just put 73 points up on the Bucks in the first half. Aberration that might be, but do you have a sense of which opponent just, because at this point, not about whether they could beat the Bucks, but might give the Bucks an easier time. Which opponent is the one the Bucks should want to face at this point?
Yeah, that's a better way of phrasing it, because I don't think they care at all. I think it's a sweep either way. I think you'd still want to face Brooklyn. They're still, you know, for everything that happened the other day, if you play the Bucks' full complement of players, they don't. I mean, yes, like they'll probably have Jared Allen back and Caris LeVert and Joe Harris and guys like that, but they still don't really have an answer for Brook Lopez. He plays really well against them. They definitely don't have an answer for Giannis. They just don't have the matchup really at all. And yes, like the Magic without Jonathan Isaac is definitely a big loss. He's a really, really good young player in the league. I was like really tempted when I was doing my NBA awards balloting to put him on like second team all defense. Like I just like it was like a brief temptation. Like it wasn't real, but it was like it was a momentary thought. Like he only played like 35 or so games before bubble season. So he didn't really play enough to actually like earn a spot, but like when he is in there and in the games that I've watched, like against the Bucks and against other teams, he is a menace. Like he is such a good defensive player that he's just so impressive. And, you know, I think that he has a lot of promise in the future. Hopefully he can get back from this ACL injury and be himself and be good. Cause I think he is a really like promising young guy. But, you know, the Magic, they need all their pieces, right? Like they're a team that if they're going to make things interesting in the first round, they need everybody, and they don't have everybody now. So I think that either way, the Bucks play either of those teams and take them seriously. I think we're looking at a 4-game sweep.
I'm pretty excited to see this game against the Heat on Thursday. I do think coming off of a couple losses, the Bucks are going to be pretty motivated to put approximately their best foot forward, and curious to see how those two teams match up. Before I let you go, any last thoughts you have? Anything else that's jumped out at you through these first three games inside the NBA bubble?
You know, I've been kind of impressed with the Pacers and the way that TJ Warren has suddenly become, like, you know, incredible and unstoppable.
53 points, TJ Warren!
Yeah. Just wild. And obviously the Bucks know firsthand what he can do and the way he can hurt you. You know, I happen to remember a game earlier this season where he went off against the Bucks. And so they know all about that. But I know their schedule gets a little bit harder, but it's interesting because, you know, they're as of our recording this on Wednesday morning, they're still hanging on to that five spot. They're a game and a half up on the Sixers. So that they're giving themselves an opportunity to maintain that five spot. And of course, you know, they started the bubble by beating the Sixers. So I think they have the tiebreaker there. it just kind of makes things interesting seating wise with only a handful of games to go. Who's going to be in that five spot? Probably against Miami. And how does that, you know, line up the matchups for the future? Could this be, you know, a Miami-Indiana first round with the Bucks taking on the winner? Well, you would expect Miami, but, you know, who knows? And would that then mean Celtics-Sixers in the first round, meaning one of those teams, you know, teams that were thought to be maybe the second and third or definitely top four, two of the top four teams in the East before the season, one of them's going to be out in the first round? You know, and of course, like, you know, it sets up some drama if the Sixers can kind of rally. Can they get to the five seed? Do they want the five seed? Do they care? You know, maybe they do. Can they get there before the end of the season and then again flip the matchup? So I just think that that's all pretty interesting. I think one and two are pretty locked up for the top of the East, but that hodgepodge of like 3 through 6 could get interesting over the last few games.
I feel if the Pacers had Sabonis, I think they'd be a little bit more of a threat in my mind. And it's kind of funny how I've stopped thinking about the Philadelphia 76ers when I think about the teams to contend with in the East. Certainly, we may hear from them still. And we'll have to talk more about the Toronto Raptors going forward, because that is an interesting team. And Kawhi or no is going to be an interesting challenge should the Bucks run into them in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Matt, thanks for joining us again. He is Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has on the Milwaukee Bucks at jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us. We will chat again very soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.